Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peake, host of the HER podcast. Welcome to our show in episode 470. Whoa, as we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, wisdom, her wisdom from a world-class athlete. This is such a great show. You're going to love it. Before we begin, just know that this episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y Vitamins. These are vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature. They have a special gift for women. The new award-winning Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including ouch, PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. This is an integrative, holistic approach to having a woman's back throughout her journey. To learn more about her life stages, run on over to your local health food store or check it out at solaray.com to learn more and use promo code HER20 to get 20% off. You'll be glad you did. And here's your first reminder to click on iTunes once we're done with the episode to rate and review the show, because our entire team just loves to hear your feedback. All right, it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about HER.
Now, you know out there in the HER podcast land how much I love to be able to keep coming back to that whole issue of resilience in life. And many times, you know, you'll see me pivot to one of my favorite places, which is physical activity, because you know I'm on the board of the American College of Sports Medicine. I'm a physician who's been deeply interested in this and obviously practice what I preach. You know, after a long history with marathon and triathlon. And I'm always looking for great stories, especially from people who know how to speak to the issue of resilience. Boy, do I have someone for you today. Her name is Kay Diane Glynn. Now, who in heaven's name is this? Well, to be perfectly blunt with you, she was inducted into the USATF Masters Hall of Fame, and she currently holds the indoor world records in the pole vault, long jump, triple jump, pentathlon, and heptathlon. Bleh. Every time I say that, for the women's 70 to 70 year old age division. You heard that right. And she's going to tell us all about how all of this took place, but most importantly, talking about the whole issue of obstacles along the way and how our life lessons from these spill over into everything in our life. So Kay, welcome, welcome, welcome to the HER podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so happy to be here, and I love all the inspirational things you have to tell me.
Okay, I'm loving every moment of this. All right, now what I want to do is I would very, very much like to ask you how this whole thing began.
Yes, that's the question. Why do I do what I do?
Yep, why do you do what you do?
Sometimes I ask myself that, but I grew up on a farm with an older brother. We spent a lot of time outdoors. I was a very physically active kid. I took dancing lessons when I was young and did acrobatics, and I always enjoyed that. And as I moved into high school, I got involved with sports and had some success with that in track and field. And I moved on to getting married and having three kids. And finally, when I had my kids and they were going to a track meet, they said, "Look, Mom, there's old people out there. You could do this." And mind you, I was about 47 at the time. But I accepted that challenge. So the next year, I thought, I'll get out there on the track. They do look like they're having fun. So I did it the next year. And I did the long jump and the 100 and the 200. That's the only thing I knew anything about from when I was 18 years old. So here I was 30 years later. I might say I did have a little bit of a 30-year layoff, but I was still active because I taught dancing and acrobatic lessons. So I was somewhat in shape, but this was a whole new thing, and I was really sore, and I thought, you know, I never want to be that sore and out of shape again. So I started working out on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis. It became daily, and then I found out that they had some events that were my age. Actually, the first event I did was a multi-event, which was participating in 5 different track events with my daughter. And then someone said, well, you can do that with people your age. And I said, oh, well, that would be much better. I would feel much better about that. So then I went to my first event as a master's athlete, is what they call us. I had a good time. It turned out good. I had some good numbers. And I never looked back after that. I met so many great people the first year, and they told me that there were other meets that I could go to. So I went to those meets. I saw some of the same people. I saw some new people. We had one thing that was very common amongst us, and that was the activity that we did. And it also came about, you know, some of the challenges that we had along the way and why we were still there. And that's just what's kept me going. And each year I just try to improve on that. I meet more people. I just never give up. So why should I?
Excellent. You know, I'm reading about your background. You've always been athletic, one way or the other. At one point, you had a dance studio for 20 years. And looking at your body, it's very clear that, number one, God was very kind to you because you have a long, slender, it's a lean, muscular body, basically screaming to be in some kind of sport. I think the pictures of you doing your pole vault, especially as you come right over the bar, are fairly spectacular. I mean, you just say to yourself, how in heaven's name? But one of the things that I'm very interested in knowing is that in your own life, have you had times when things have been rough at any level? And you were able to kind of tap into your inner athlete to be able to get you through.
I think there have been a lot of times that I thought, can I go on? When obstacles came up. Some of them were mentally and some of them were physically. I don't know which ones were harder to compensate for, but the medical challenges I've had. Well, I had something wrong with my hip after I had a really good year and I set a world record, and all of a sudden I couldn't run because it hurt. And I said, what is this? It took about 7 doctors before they could tell me. And they said, it's arthritis and you need to have your hip replaced and maybe you need to find a new hobby. So I'd accepted that. And I told some of my track friends on the internet, and a couple of them said, no, there's something else. Don't give up. Don't give in to that. You can have it resurfaced instead of replaced. And then you can go on and do everything that you always did. So after another year of looking into that, I had both of my hips over the course of 3 years resurfaced, which is a replacement that allows me to have the same dexterity and the same physical abilities that I had before. And my doctor encouraged me to go out there and continue. And one thing I learned from one of my competitors was that when you have an issue and you go to the doctor, we kind of needed to educate the doctor about 10 or 15 years ago and tell them that this is what we do. And we are not happy sitting in a rocking chair pain-free. We want to be doing stuff pain-free. So I would go to the doctor and I would take a picture, maybe of my pole vaulting picture. And I would say, this is what I do. This is what's normal for me. And I'm having a problem right now, but I want to be able to fix it so I can do this again. And I was surprised that they never said, oh, I don't think so. They said, well, okay, let's do that then. So that happened. And I had an ACL that was torn. I had to sit out for about 9 months when I got it replaced in my knee. I had a rotator cuff that I think probably was torn from the fact that I had helped spot my dance students with their acrobatics for, you know, 20 years and used that shoulder a lot. And it finally went the trip. But once I had gotten through one of those operations, I knew it was possible to recover and go on. And even now when I talk to people, I'm amazed at some of the things that they've had to go through. They've had strokes. They've had a lot more what I consider major effects happen to their body. They've got pacemakers in, and they're still out there doing the running, and they're encouraged to do that and to stay healthy.
I love that. And to that point, I want to pile on to that because the point is really interesting. I have to have a conversation with my fellow brethren out there. It's like before you tell someone to just sit on their ass and not to, you know, be physically active anymore, take a deep breath and ask them, what do you normally do? And if you're talking to someone who is used to being athletic, they're not going to sit there, to your point, rocking chair aside, and just take it. And that athletes have a really interesting way of just sort of coming back and being able to resume what they do. And I think of someone who I met, who I'll never forget, is Joan Benoit Samuelson, who was the first woman to ever, you know, get the gold in the Olympic marathon. That was the very first time the Olympic marathon was, and I quote, allowed for women, the little delicate people that we are, we'll laugh. And, you know, she had just had knee surgery right before she ran the Olympic marathon. And so it was within a short period of time. And yet she just sort of said, well, thanks for sharing. And then just went out there and ran and won the gold. And so this is true for everything in life. You know, you sit down and you have to think of yourself uniquely. What can you do? What's important to you? What drives you? Now, have you ever had any personal things that have happened in life outside of sports where you see yourself tapping into your inner athlete and that strength, mind and body, to be able to get through a tough time in life? You're how old now?
I'm 71.
71 and proud of it. So in all those 71 years, have you had times when there might have been a challenge, you know, in anything in your life where you can tap into the magic of that inner athlete to be able to get yourself through?
I have definitely had to talk myself into knowing why I do what I do. And at this age, my mom lived to be 95 years old. And I lost my dad quite a few years ago. But when things like that happen, it's like, I need to go on. They knew I was happy doing what I do. I've had, my husband was in the hospital. He had had a fall. But every day when I came home from the hospital, I had to go out and run because I knew I had to be there for him. I knew I had to help him. I knew I had to stay sane. I had to make decisions. And I just felt better when I could go out and exercise. It might not necessarily be a full-blown two-hour exercise like I do on a normal day. It might not involve pole vaulting and high jumping, but it just released some of the pressure that I felt I put upon myself by being able to get the exercise. And I knew that I could overcome it because I had overcome so many things. Every time you run a race, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But you learn how to deal with that. You learn from it. You think about it. You decide what might have worked or what might not have worked. And then you kind of put it up on a shelf and then you go on. When you run across something in your life like that, you do the same thing. You think, what am I going to do about this? How am I going to handle this? I need to get some sleep. I need to get some food. I need to continue to persevere because it's up to me to go on.
And also, at the same time, other people may depend upon you, like your husband in that case, for instance, and surely, I guess, the caregiving for your mom and your dad. What's important here is that there's another life lesson. I'm always extracting these great little life lessons, you know? And one of them is when things are really tough, the last thing you want to do is self-destruct. When you're feeling like, you know, this is just too much, I can't face it, I want to, as it were, anesthetize myself. Well, what are you going to anesthetize yourself with? Is it going to be alcohol, drugs? Is it going to be a cigarette? Is it going to be eating mountains of sugary fatty food because you just want to numb yourself from the pain of it all. I think what we're trying to argue here, Kay and I, is that there's another way. And that is, you know, to be able to get out there and to de-stress by actually using your body and your mind. You know, it feels so refreshing, even if for all intent and purposes, and I'm sure you've done this, Kay, it's just taking a very long walk. It's just like, I got to hammer it out. I got to think about this. Have you done that?
Yes, very much.
To me, it's like, as a physician, I would write a prescription for that. Like, you're having really a tough time now. You're navigating your way through some challenge in life, a relationship, work, whatever the issue may be. And something is really bugging you. You need to kind of think about it, contemplate. The best thing I have ever found is to grab my German Shepherd and just hammer out a nice long walk and just figure it out. Science now shows that when you do physical activity, whether it's the walk or you're kind of doing that pole vault thing, that you actually think clearer, that you're able to, your cognitive performance is enhanced when you utilize physical activity to help yourself as you think tough things through. That's our argument, our collective argument, Kay and myself, to choose a bit differently. So instead of being someone who is always defaulting to some self-destructive behavior, which also means hiding under the sheets, just not wanting to get up and face it all, you're going to have to confront it one way or the other. You know, Kay, you've been all over social media. You've been on television. People have really talked to you in a big way. Here you are. You are, for all intent and purposes, an elite athlete. And you're 71, which is absolutely fabulous. So what happens when a woman who is, say, 60, even 50, or 65, whatever, comes up to you and she's not been physically active. She's kind of got a lot of extra weight on board and her muscles are not, you know, strong and toned, et cetera. And she looks at someone like you and sees you as mission impossible. How do you counsel people like that who have deep in their heart the desire to be better, to enhance themselves? How do you begin to work with someone like that?
Well, I think the key word there was desire. And when they come up to me, they already have that desire. When they start to say, I love what you do, I would like to be able to do that, but I just don't know where to begin. Well, that fact right there tells you that they're going to work at it and they'll do whatever you can possibly help them with. I always tell them to start out slow. Find something they like to do, an activity. You know, you're not going to stick with it if you try to force yourself to do something you don't want to, but it will make you feel better. And I think just by taking that walk, that's kind of the first thing I tell them to do, is get off the couch, put your shoes on, and take a walk. And you might want to try putting that in to a daily routine. For me, that was kind of the key thing. Ever since I was younger, I enjoyed like practicing my dance when I was a kid, and I did that on a daily basis. And I think when they start out, they need to find a little spot and say, I'm just going to take 5 minutes out of my day and I'm going to go for a walk. And the next day, it might be 10 minutes and it might be more. They might want to join a gym if they feel the need that they want to be around other people and like-minded people. And I think they will be encouraged by them also and see what they're able to do. There are more older athletes out there than what there used to be, so we're a little easier to find. But yeah, you don't need to go out and pole vault to start out with. But I think once they find and get a taste of what it's like to feel a little better, they'll start eating a little better. And I know that I sleep a lot better because of the activity I get. And so hopefully it just kind of snowballs. But if you can just get them to say, I wish I could do that, that's all I need, and I can take it and run with it, and I can turn them towards the internet where they can get some ideas, some good ideas. They can contact me. I've talked people through getting operations. I've talked people through learning how to set up a program. So I'm there for them, and if they're willing to start out, and that's the big step, is the first step.
So you mentioned eating and nutrition. So the grand majority of people out there, no shock here, ladies, are just totally confused. It's just a mess. So what would you guide them with? So right now, they completely bought this woman, you know, this fictitious little woman that we've come up with, right? So she is all in now. She's going to do that walk. She's going to start doing it as a routine. It'll be a start for her, right? What about eating? How do you start them out on the correct path to being able to eat well?
I guess I have my own regimen that I've developed over the years. I think I eat a lot healthier now than when I was 30 years old. But I do say that I would always like to be able to push away from the table and get up and go do a workout. I know that I've been well-fueled, but still I'm not stuffed. And that's the way I like to feel, like, all the time. So I eat smaller meals. I don't eat a lot of processed foods. I've cut back on the fried foods. My grandchild, when he was about 5 years old, he lives in Texas now, and he's about 15 years old. He said, you know, the grandma with the long blonde hair that eats broccoli. What's her name?
The grandma with the broccoli. Oh, my God.
And they still, every time I go back and forth, they know that I'm going to be bringing my own fresh broccoli with me.
Oh, you're so funny. You know, it's like BYOB, bring your own broccoli.
Yeah.
I love that. But you also said something else that is exceptionally important, something that was brought out in the work that Dan Buettner did with the Blue Zones. And these are the countries around the world that have the 100-year-olds, the centenarians. And the Okinawans in particular have a special way of saying this in Japanese, which I am not going to say because I butcher it terribly. But what it means is stop before full. So when you look at a meal, what you're not going to do is, like, you know, vacuum it into your mouth without even thinking. You eat it methodically, and then you stay in touch with your body, and you're able to actually say, whoa, I'm actually satisfied right now. Then you look at your plate, and there's still food there. Well, that's fine. It's called put it in your fridge and, you know, heat it up later. I mean, nobody died here. But what we tend to do in America is we just eat mountains of everything thoughtlessly and don't even check in with our bodies as to whether or not we just, like, raced right through satiation and now we're like, full, way over full. So I love what you just said. And, you know, in my own athletics, I learned that too. When I was doing marathon training years ago, I tried to run after I had a little too much to eat, and that didn't go well. So I learned how to modulate that. So I'm glad to know I'm in good company with that.
Right. I have a thought or a question.
Yeah.
I have always thought, and I've not really had anyone that'll take me up on this experiment, but if you eat one meal a day and you put a ton of food on your plate and it's 6 o'clock at night, I swear that if you took that same amount of food and you ate it in six different times throughout the day, that you would feel better and lose weight. Don't you think that's true?
You're so funny. Well, actually, you know, we're stepping into the rabbit hole of weight loss, and we'll probably break our ankles doing this. So in the best of all worlds, what you're trying to do is match your physical activity and your daily functional living with how you eat. And so you are an elite athlete, so you don't count. You're, like, you know, in a whole different unicorn category, because elite athletes, it's like feeding a machine, because you require, based upon extremely high level, high intensity training, a whole different way to be able to do your thing. And so you don't count, because if you take an average woman out there who is just trying to get through the day, many times it's also a matter of practicality. And that is, you're running around and it's hard to score food like super frequently. However, that being said, if you start the day out appropriately with a proteinaceous breakfast, break fast, if you remember what that is, then if you just look and see what level of physical activity you're doing that day, if it's a pretty high level, you want to make sure you have enough fuel on board. For sure, you could do like a healthy sort of snackish thing in the mid-morning and then have a nice, excellent main meal around, you know, the early afternoon, another snackish kind of thing later on. Again, spreading protein out throughout the day as you do, because you have to maintain those extraordinary muscles of yours. And then to de-emphasize what happens at dinner time for an average woman. Again, you're not average, but to de-emphasize it and not to have super heavy carbs at nighttime. And there's a reason for that. Insulin, which manages your carbohydrates, basically packages them, metabolizes them. Insulin, especially as we're older, is most efficient at doing its metabolic work in the morning and the early afternoon. And so if you pile on Mount St. Pasta, you know, at 7 o'clock at night, that baby's going to be converted into fat as fast as you could say converting into fat. So this is why you have to be strategic about how you do this, how old you are, your level of physical activity. Because like when I train, I'm a resistance trained athlete. So when I train, I don't obviously lift half a mountain every day, but I will more than happily do something like that, like every other day. And then I'm doing different things in between aerobically. So it's a matter of planning strategically and matching physical activity with fuel, but keeping the main template that the majority of eating is done for all intent and purposes by 3 or 4. And then what happens after that is like not a big Bacchanalian feast. And this is what I see a lot of women do. And then add alcohol to that and you got yourself a real mess. Does that make sense to you, Kay?
Right. That's very true. And I guess that's how I've learned to eat, just by experience. And I just kind of fell into what made me feel better when I worked out. It's weird to me, but when I get up in the morning, I usually know when I'm going to work out and what I'm going to eat for the day and when I'm going to eat it. I know that I'm not going to have any energy to make something nutritious when I need to eat it. So I try to make that ahead of time. I take things with me, that fruits that I can eat that kind of tide me over till the next time I can have a chance to get the protein. But yeah, it's not really a fun activity. Eating isn't. It's not a social event for me. It's just what I need. Just what I need to carry on life. It's just what I need to sustain me. So it's not really all that fun, but it's just something I do. And that's why I say I take out a lot of the sauces and the casseroles. I eat, I guess, what they say is a clean type of eating. It's, you just feel better and you're more able to control what goes in your mouth. And I do have a little bit of trouble with my M&Ms in the evening, but.
Oh, wait a minute now. Wait. Whoa. I didn't know about that one. Didn't see that baby coming. So yeah, I mean, look, every human being has got a little something going on with regard to, you know, eating and taking care of yourself and all the rest of it. The little sweets and treats are absolutely where it's at. If M&Ms are where you're at, that's totally cool. We all have our gig. We all do. The key is it's a treat. Treats happen occasionally. They don't happen like routinely every single day and all the rest of it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be a treat. They'd be a part of a routine. A treat is something special. So that's the way I look at it. And I welcome excellent treats. And if you're going to have a treat, then make it a high quality one if you can. M&Ms, well, you know.
It's dark chocolate.
That's what I do. I do 72% chocolate. And I have little squares that work really well for me. And you don't need that much. I'm dying to know, when you go to, like, somebody invites you over for Thanksgiving, you know, and it's going to be like a lot of couples there and a lot of people and whatever. There's all kinds of, you know, the usual kind of food that can be problematic. How do you deal with that?
It's actually easy to do it for a day like that because you're only there for a day and that's not going to ruin your diet. And you can still find a lot of vegetables. They'll usually have a vegetable tray and things that are better. But on those holidays, I eat what not probably as much as I used to, but I have a little taste of everything anyway. And it's easier if unless you're hosting it. And then when you're making things ahead of time, when you're making the cookies and the pies and the things ahead of time, that's hard to stay away from. And when you have them left over, that's hard to stay away from. So you give all your leftovers, all your sweets to everybody going out the door when they leave. But yeah, I enjoy my holidays and my birthdays and those special times. But I do just, I'm still mindful of the quantity I have.
I'm just glad to know you're human. Just bring yourself down to earth with all the rest of us mortals as we kind of, you know, struggle through the whole thing one way or the other. You know, when you're looking around today, I'm just curious your thoughts. We have statistics that now show that the majority of American adults by the year 2030, which is right around the corner, will be obese. Right now, the majority of adults are overweight, meaning that they will carry at least 50 extra pounds above some normative weight. And along with that comes deconditioning and all the rest of it, and let alone the medical conditions and the rest of it that come with it. What are your thoughts? You hang out with athletes and everything, but you've got to see what goes on in airports and, you know, you look around yourself. What crosses your mind about what in heaven's name has happened?
I don't know, because I think even the older generation are more aware of their eating habits than what the younger ones are that don't do as much movement. We used to have those jobs that took a lot more effort than what they do now. And we spend a lot more time in a chair at offices working. And it's really hard, but I think they've got to learn. They've got to be aware of how they feel. And they're going to feel better if they can get a little exercise in there. Like I said, it doesn't have to be a lot. And if it's with people that they know, there's a lot of pickleball going on for the older people. We've developed a new sport or whatever for the older people. It's a pastime that we're able to enjoy. And I don't know how the younger kids, how they're going to fare out. But all I know is that my grandkids are all involved in sports and I don't have any overweight grandkids. So I'm happy for that. But it is an issue. And I don't know. I wish doctors did write a prescription and say, this is what you have to do. You have to jog for 20 minutes each day and I'm not giving you any medicine. I don't take any medicine, any heart medication, any cholesterol medication or anything. But it's easier for the doctors to prescribe that and the people won't do it. You know, if you tell them you don't really need medicine, you just need to get more active. It's bad what they're doing with the food market. There's so many things that they're putting sugar in instead of taking it out. Places that sugar does not belong with our meats and our vegetables. I don't know. I don't have the ability to do anything about that. I don't think, except present myself that you're not going to see a overweight, heavy person reaching 100 years old very often. We have people out on the track that are 100 years old. And yeah, they're moving.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. I remember seeing my very first National Senior Games back at Carnegie Mellon when they did it then. And I was floored by the 90 and 95-year-olds and the rest of it out of doing track and field, which was amazing. But you said something that really struck home, and that is, you said that it's a different world now. Earlier, like decades ago, our parents' world and grandparents' world, it was a much more physical world. Kids were able to actually walk safely to school. And many times they would walk a good mile to 2 miles. There was none of this, you know, two blocks kind of thing. It was a different world. You didn't have to worry about them running into problems one way or the other. Kids could play after school openly. You'd have neighborhoods with doors flung open, very different. And the jobs were much more physically demanding in many respects. Of course, there's always been white-collar jobs, but today it's just primarily that in a big way among certain sectors of the population. And so our world has changed. And I think that our bodies basically have suffered because of that. And I think it was these subtle changes. And once you introduce comfort, remote controls, and things like this, yeah, it's hard going back saying, no, what you really need to do is. Now, what you should be happy about is that with the American College of Sports Medicine, what we have is a campaign that's been going on for a long time. It's called Exercise is Medicine. And we actually write prescriptions for exercise. But that also means you have to be a provider who understands exercise and physical activity to be able to do something like that. And so we've developed an entire repertoire of different kinds of prescriptions based upon whatever your issues are. If your knees are a little funky, if your hips are a little funky, if you've always been sedentary, now you're going to start, what do you do? So I refer everyone to the American College of Sports Medicine's website, to the Exercise is Medicine area, and you can see for yourself, and this is all free, how we prescribe. And I'm very proud of this. This is wonderful work that my colleague Bob Salas at Kaiser has come up with. And get this, Kay, this ought to make you happy. We're trying to create a new vital sign. So you've got like blood pressure and heart rate and all this stuff. Now we're going to have a new one, which is what is your physical activity level? And we're actually going to ask that question. Can you imagine how radical that is? Yeah, I mean, it makes me crazy to even have to say that it's kind of radical, but it's rarely ever asked. And I think it's becoming more, a little bit more of a thing now. So to that end, there we have it. Now, I'm thinking as we're beginning to wrap this up here a little bit, a couple things. One is, what would you say to so many of the women who are listening right now, who really feel a bit helpless, hopeless, and defeated? They say to themselves, well, they write you off. They say, oh, she's always been an athlete. She's lucky. She never had to, you know, deal with all the crazy stuff that we have to deal with, you know, with regard to our lives, our weight, and our feelings about ourselves and stuff. And they just feel kind of down about the whole thing. What do you say to people like that?
Well, the fact that they're just kind of down about the whole thing tells them they know that there's something that they should do to make it better. Why are these people that they're looking at, why do they seem so happy? And I have been to meets that I've competed with the high school and college girls, and they'll say, I'm going to do that when I'm your age. So I hope that that helps let them know that age doesn't, it doesn't matter how old you are as to what you do. There might be some of those people that think, well, I don't want to do that because I'm a grown-up. We don't do that. And you've got to think of something fun. You've got to take a little time out. You can be a better person just to get in a little exercise. I know there's a lot on your plate, and that's like the people that think, I'm going to jump into this, and I'm going to work out 2 hours, and I'm going to start at 5 o'clock every day. Well, that's probably not going to last. You have a family, you have commitments. You've got to be real with yourself and know how much you can put forth right now. And over time, it might change. You might find that you have more energy. You have a little more time to get more done. And it's really a snowballing effect if you can just get those shoes on and get started. So you have to get your inspiration from somewhere. Music, put some music on if you're down. That's been a great motivator. Where I work out, in my pole vaulting shed, I have music going all the time. I would never be without it. So maybe that's something. You've got to find out what motivates you and what makes you want to be, what makes you want to feel better.
So Kay, what's your goal now? So you are a record holder in so many different events. You're, you know, number one in the world for your age and your gender. So in your 71 years of age, all right? So what's in the future for you? Do you think about things like, I wonder what 80 is going to look like?
Right now I have a torn meniscus, and that's something brand new. But I have learned that this too shall pass. You work with whatever you have to work with. You do the best with whatever you have to work with at the time. My future, I thought, what if I did something really kind of catastrophic and I just really couldn't do what I'm doing now? I would still be doing something physical. I don't know what it would be, but I just know how much difference it's made in my life. And it goes together with the eating and the sleeping and just feeling better and happier. So it'll be something physical. I think the most important thing definitely to me now is to be healthy and show up, whether it's practice or whether it's a meet. My goals are not exactly to beat anything except myself. I just want to do better all the time. See, I've had to change some things over the years because I'm at a disadvantage because I'm a little bit older. So I've had to like go out and get a coach and actually learn how to do things correctly, which helps me improve. I've had to learn that I need more sleep, so I might have to change that. There's things I've had to change along the way, and I'll keep changing them as I get older so that I can perform to the best of my ability. But I've said, as long as it's fun and it doesn't hurt, I'll keep doing it.
I love it. You know, I love that. Be healthy and show up. That's awesome. The fact that when things happen, you just make changes. And so in my books, I created a little verb. It's called A squaring it. And the two A's are adapt and adjust. So when things happen, it's like, okay, the last thing you want to do is quit, unless it's just, you know, life threatening or something like that. But most of the time, there's always another way to be able to express yourself, especially physically. And you seem to be multi-talented in so many different physical domains, I can only imagine. But do you ever think about yourself at the age of 80? I'm just curious, because people oftentimes think of things like the fives and the zeros. So you're 71. Do you think of 75? Do you think of 80?
Well, in my sport, you can set records when you hit those zeros, because I compete in 5-year increments. So I compete at 70 with the ones that are up to 74. And then when I turn 75, I'll be the young kid again. I'll get to compete against the 75 to 79-year-olds. So 80 should be a great year.
Nah, you know, I'm going to tell you something. It's very funny. As we're bringing this thing to a close, oh my gosh, I could talk to you forever. When I went to the National Senior Games in Cleveland, one of the things that was kind of fun was looking at the triathlon for the 85 to 90 group. And what was very fun at that time were there were three women. That's it. And so the joke was, they're all going to medal. And the question was, what color were you going to get? And so what they would do is they'd compete with each other every year. And I believe personally, just like what you just said about, you know, going to the zeros, that the very thought of being able to have an advantage or whatever, and to have that competitive fever deep inside your belly, that it keeps you going. And so when I questioned each woman, you know, as they finished up and everything, and they were hitting the podium, they believe that already they were thinking about the next games, and the games happen every 2 years. So if you do some math, I mean, we're moving into 90 here. And so one of them is older and she goes, when I'm 90, I'm going to be number one because no one else is out there. So my job in life, when I'm thinking about the senior games, is I want to stay old. I want to stay in really good health long enough so that like I'm either one of three, one of two, or one of one. And then I could just sort of show up and, you know, take my time. just do my thing.
Right. That's what you have to look forward to. I told my husband, I don't know, we were talking to someone one time and they said, yeah, I turned 70. And I said, oh, that's great. And my husband said, honey, he doesn't run track.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. Some people go, oh my God, I'm 70. I'm so old. And you're like, yeah, 70, bring it on. You know, I can do that. Here's the thing. There's so many possibilities. And you can continue to really kind of blow your own mind with what you can actually do. All right, one last nugget from you about some little wonderful, wise thought to leave with all these beautiful women who are listening to you.
Well, it's never too late. You never want to give up. And you just need to get up off the couch and put on your shoes and wear them out.
I love it. Just wear those shoes out. Come on, girlfriends, in the Herb podcast land, wear out your shoes. Oh my gosh. Everyone, we have been talking to a world-class athlete, number one in so many different events in track and field, and already inducted into the Masters Hall of Fame, for crying out loud. Look her up, Kay Glynn, and her website is Kay Glynn, that's spelled GLYNN.com, KayGlynn.com, to learn more about her. And if you want to reach out to her, she has a way to be able to do that on the website there. All I can say, Kay, is this has just been extraordinary, and we're deeply honored to have someone of your stature in track and field coming on down to the Herb podcast to be able to help inform us and to be able to inspire with your perspiration. Inspire as you perspire.
And I so appreciate what you do, and that's inspiring to us, and that teaches everybody what we need to know.
Excellent. It's called knowledge. We love that. We love that. We love that. So again, it's Kay Glynn, GLYNN.com, if you want to learn more. And all I can say is, whoa, this has been such a fantastic episode with Kay Glynn, the famous track and field star at the age of 71. I want to give another shout out to our sponsor, Solaray Vitamins. And these are vitamins, herbs that are rooted in nature. And remember, the Her Life Stages products, ask about them. Go to solaray.com, learn more, use promo code HER20 for 20% off. All right. I can tell you right now, this has just been another amazing Herb podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peake, your host, and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our Herb podcast community. Pop on over to drpeake.com to learn more about my work and social media. Join me every single week for another Herb podcast where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Kay Glynn as we share our wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. Thanks so much, and remember that your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and seize the day. Have a great one.